attendees of this meeting. This is important to both Graham, our development partner, and to the town of Capitol Hill. And it'd be appropriate to move by consent into closed session according to the statute that Ralph was going to mention for the purpose of keeping us right on the right track.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. Just for purposes of record, this the authority is 143-11-A4 to discuss matters related to economic development. If the committee by consensus would agree to move into closed session for that purpose, then we should proceed.
Any opposition? Okay, so we proceed to closed session. Well, I got a lovely package at my house last night, and I'm not sure who wants to.
Mr. Chairman. Rand has been away working as best they can to continue to solve the problems that we have encountered. As you'll remember, in our last discussion, it was clear that the price of materials has increased very substantially, particularly concrete and steel, that the cost of the project was much higher at this point than it was when the original request for proposal came in. And RAM was busy working on exploring potential solutions to that problem. At one point, they were interested in the possibility of acquiring additional land adjacent Lot 5 as a way of reducing costs by getting parking above ground. As they worked on that issue, I think Casey used the term that the owners were beginning to think they'd won the lottery. And so those costs started to look bad as well. And they brought John Flooring in to take a look at how to make the project more efficient as a way of reducing costs, and he's done some good things in that regard. They've been rethinking how to make the entire project workable and efficient and still meet the council's goals. They've taken the best shot at that they can, and there's certainly much of merit to be considered. There's some things that I think are probably not consistent with the council's goals, and those will become apparent to you as you talk it through. John, last night, in just the few hours that he had, took a look at the program information and the economic data, and has some interesting viewpoints about other things that might be considered to either raise revenues or reduce costs and change the balance a little bit. And my gut feel, having spent a couple of hours with Casey yesterday and then a little time with John this morning, is that there is a solution here, and that there is a way for this project to go forward, but some of the terms and conditions might be different than the council would be willing to consider. That's a vague judgment that you will have to make, and that your colleagues on the council will have to make. It feels like to me there's still a deal here, and that the things that you were trying to accomplish in the downtown still can be accomplished. And if John's numbers are the numbers we end up with, then a lot of problems get solved. My guess is that the solution is somewhere between Casey's solution and John's solution. There's a middle ground in there somewhere that'll work for everybody. They have done some drawings as well as think through the numbers. My suggestion is that the most useful thing to do to progress through this quickly would be to let Casey describe the approach that they've taken and some of the key issues they've dealt with and how the numbers work, basically explain the program, and then talk about other key issues that the council is interested in, if that would be agreeable. And then after that, let John have a go at it from his perspective, because his perspective focuses solely on the numbers at this point. He hasn't had time to really look at a cohesive, coherent, full set of numbers. It'll take some time for Casey to generate that and put it on to look at.
You guys are here with that?
Jason?
Thanks for that background. What I wanted to do was really start by walking you through our concept, our revisions really to our concept on lot 5. And also clarify for you that the drawing you received yesterday, really the massing set of the front sheet, the top sheet there, is not trying to depict new architecture, new materials, new colors. It's really just trying to show a perspective from Rosemary, which is where where the elevations will change. The actual what's happening on the floor plan, on the site plan, will change under what we're proposing. But we haven't taken into consideration either in our numbers or in these sketches any changes to any materials, any quality, anything of that sort from the Dean Malico peer review. So when I look at those colored sketches and I look at some of the other renderings that we've prepared, they appear to be different. But I want you to understand that this rendering that you're looking at is not meant to fit any change in architecture.
Because Dean Malico was quite clear that we hadn't yet chosen the palette.
Right. And this is not an attempt to try to describe the palette. This is really just, we're trying to really study what's happening on Rosemary. We have been trying to accomplish, I'm going to try to stay focused on the program first and then get into the financial impacts, but it's hard because they're really so intertwined, because really the reason we're contemplating changing the program is to address some financial concerns. What you'll recall, the previous plan, which we might even have calculus here, had an alley and really functioned as three separate buildings, one here. This is Franklin, Church, Rosemary. Had an alley, had a building here, a building here, and then a building there. And one of the important things about having three separate buildings is you need three separate vertical transportation systems. You need three separate systems of virtually everything. You also effectively need to have more building skin area as a relationship to the actual sellable square feet in three separate buildings than if they were connected. So I would say that the big changes of what we've proposed here from the actual buildings are to connect them. So in effect, it's one building. Now it will continue to read as three separate buildings because there's three distinct areas where the heights are different and they don't have to go a long time. Mm-hmm. This is a 4-5 story building. I think it's four.
One level breaks down with three residential buildings, as it was before.
Mm-hmm. 4-story building had it before. This is low here, right? 4 stories right. Here. And then wrapping all through here will be the same.
Right.
Three level residential building. So that's unchanged. And then in the middle, what we've actually done is reduce the building from 8 levels of residential above 1 level of retail to 7 levels of residential above 1 level of retail. And so we've actually reduced somewhat the scope, the number of square feet on the project. And we reduced it also, we reduced the number of units by virtue of creating what amounts to a penthouse floor. And part of what we're really trying to do is address the parking, which has really been the most difficult challenge. The other significant change is the elimination of this alley, which there will still be pedestrian access through there. We're not sure that it's going to be all that nice until the next parcel comes in, because there's really not a tremendous amount of room. So really what we've got to do is establish it as a pedestrian easement, and then when the next parcel comes in, there'll be enough room so that somebody can create a nicer pathway. The negative of eliminating that alley, there's a tremendous amount of positives in terms of how the parking tucks under it and what happens with the way the site lays out. There's a tremendous amount of efficiency by eliminating it. In my opinion, the only real negative to eliminating it is that the access to the garage and the mechanical and loading area is now on Rosemary, as whereas before it was on an alley that was off. So that is certainly a negative sacrifice we would have to make to accomplish the project without an alley. On the positive side, whereas this was viewed and frankly counted in our open space requirement and viewed as a pedestrian connection, and I never liked it as a pedestrian connection. I think it's dangerous. I think it was a liability to pedestrian connection. It's down, it's concrete, there'd be trucks coming through there. So that's a positive that's been eliminated. We now have a full pedestrian connection all the way through the middle of the site, which is actually one thing that the dean was trying to accomplish, and we're now able to accomplish it. So basically, there'll be a pedestrian connection all the way through the site, and in the middle of the pedestrian connection is where the elevator, the public elevators and staircase that goes down to the garage are located. So there's a fairly good rationale for this pedestrian connection with the vertical transportation in the middle. So I think that's an improvement. And frankly, it helps Rosemary just as much as it does Franklin. The other improvement, these public spaces are all the same size. Nothing has really changed there. The main plaza on the corner. The other, I think, fairly dramatic improvement is that we actually now have a public courtyard on Rosemary. We're actually able to create one. So whereas the loading now is on, and it's not like we're going to have, it's not like a large shopping center is going to get a ton of loading, but there does need to be a place where some loading to occur. Whereas the loading is on Rosemary, now we have a nice public space on Rosemary. So this is new and additional. You'll recall in the old plan we had that linear space that we went around and around as a public, as a private. We ultimately determined that it would be to some extent private. So now that is gone, and now we have more public space and more usable public space. So we think that's a positive. Yeah, here's the old. So you can see this is the same. We tried to create this connection in the old plan, and because what we're really trying to do is create one of these. So this connection is gone, but that's really because the alley is gone. But we actually have this connection, which is better. And then here's that residential court that's gone and replaced it with the public court.
So Casey, you essentially raised, you're not coming down to see if you're raising the surrogate and...
Well, the parking...
Level of parking at street level, sort of?
No, the parking, really what's happened with the parking is, there's, and John Stingback has raised this a number of times, that, there's rules of thumb about parking efficiencies, as I said before, those rules of thumb are typically established based upon, perfect site situation, grade, you can make your own shape however you want. Obviously, we have some constraints here. What we try to do is, A, reduce the number of parking spaces. So our demand for parking is reduced by virtue of shrinking the project a bit. And then we're also trying to make the parking spaces more efficient. So we're able to actually get, whereas before, I think we were shooting for about 400, I think it might have been that now, maybe 390 or 398.
390 in the garage.
390 in the garage, which was effectively at three levels, three subterranean levels. They weren't three full subterranean levels, but three subterranean levels, and we had to carve ourselves around certain improvements, and we're now basically at two full levels. So we get the benefit of, we probably had about a 15 to 17% improvement in efficiency. We're now down in the high 300 terms of square feet for parking space. We were above 400 before. And we're also able to, it's less expensive to build, for the same reason that the ninth floor of a building costs more to build than the eighth floor of a building, because, you know, they are built up scaffolding, takes longer to haul things up there. It's significantly less expensive, in our opinion, to build the first and second subterranean levels than it is to build the third. Less opportunity for things to go wrong, less exposure to rock. So it's more efficient. So one of the byproducts of some of these changes is our ability to really make the parking the most efficient. And I think in the steps that we gave you,
there's a natural grade difference between the Franklin Street, Church Street corner, and Rosemary corner. So that's the natural low point in that entrance. So we're almost one parking level below at that entrance. So by coming in there, we're effectively going two levels below grade at a portion of the site, and maybe one to one and a half.
So if you look at this,
the grades on the Rosemary Street change. The street already changed a couple of times.
So if you look at this parking diagram, which is somewhere in that half of information we provided you, the first level and the second level will effectively be identical, except for the entry ramp. Here's the first level. Here's P1 and here's P2. And again, you can see a lot of the lease up efficiency is you have to get down into the ramp, basically. The parking garage is much more efficient.
We've gone from 466 square feet per space to 392. So it's a big difference. And you get to the point of either you're either looking at two levels or three levels.
Right.
So you know three levels is just taking the whole project up, you know much larger in terms of the amount of parking it needs to be.
Now, it does seem a little like the tail wagging the dog, which is the parking, which is ancillary to the actual project, because of the cost of the parking, you're reducing the bus. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it's unusual in that regard. Yeah, I understand totally, but...
Yeah, I mean, the way this kind of ties into the financial plan is, for all intents and purposes, all you're going to do is be locked off the floor. Had we kept the floor, which we're happy to keep, the reality is we would be further, we believe there's been a line drawn in the sand by the town, and if I were the town, I'd draw the same line, and that is, there's 173 spaces out there now. When we're done, we want 173 spaces open to the public. The only wiggle room that we were able to accomplish was you've allotted us 55 spaces in the Wallace deck that are available for either our renters or whomever, our commercial tenants or our condo purchasers. So there's that swing. The problem is when we add an additional level or replace the one that we've removed, you get sort of over that line, and now you're at the point where, okay, now that we've added that one level of residential, we really need to go ahead and go down three levels. And frankly, we're not really, we don't want to be in the parking business. And you can't be in the parking business and make money if you're spending $35,000, $40,000 a space and you're charging $85 a month or $1.30 an hour, that's whatever you all charge per hour. So the problem is we can't add it. While it does appear as a tail wagging the dog, we can't just add economically. We can't just add, if we're going to put 12 units on that top floor, we can't just add, 18 parking spaces. We got to either add
it. Or really, we have to go all a couple floors to
balance. No, I mean, that would be the other way over.
Yeah. Right.
That would. To go down the other way up.
No, three more. Three more.
Right.
The bottom line is the town gets stuck on the burden of operations. We're the money for this.
Correct. The parking's all being turned over to us in this scenario.
Yeah.
The burden of the operation.
Well, if we're operating, it just becomes another number that we have to put up.
But you're operating a lot as it is.
Right.
And so, like it or not, I guess the town is in the parking business.
And,
That's it. Cam is the new parking star.
I feel like a 12-year-old prince. And
everybody's so waiting
to send it to a spot.
Oh. Ray's ready.
Ray's ready.
It's a ton of hours, so I'm just going to do it.
The book is large contingency of citizens with a parking committee and pushing for higher rates.
That's right. Exactly.
That's first from everybody.
That's right.
Parking is too expensive.
Well, the good news is in your town, actually, it was public transportation alternative. They only have to park and take the bus. I'll come to your meeting with someone to be as close to him. I think at the end of the day, and obviously there's a lot to discuss to get further into the design on Lot 5, but at the end of the day, we lose the level, we combine the buildings, the architecture is unchanged, the alley goes away, we improve pedestrian access, we add a public court on Rosemary, and the only real negative is that the loading and the entry of the garage is on Rosemary. I don't want to say that's not an insignificant negative, but it's
not a significant difference is the delivery area, because you're always going to have
Right, you're always right.
And I think this is one of the things that we tried to show in this study over here is that this could really very much be part of that streetscape and could be dressed up. We had kind of window areas above that entrance where since you're coming in, you're stepping in lower, and that you're going down, and you're reading the building across there rather than reading from the apartment entrance.
We actually had that in our Sarasota project, and you roll your eye into the building and doesn't bring the main building to the garage.
You have some activity. We actually had some open space, some terrace space out there where you have some activity with stuff in that area, and you duck down underneath, and that's really what's going on the street level, to have that interaction with the street.
Well, I tell you that my first reaction to the plan, since you seem to be thinking about it a lot, I mean, losing the alley on the east side is a huge improvement. That was a waste of space. It was not a particularly attractive pedestrian environment from my point of view, and making the arcade connection through the site really is exactly what Dean Mollinger was talking about. So I also think that if we're going to develop the urban densities downtown, having on-site delivery areas is really working across purposes. So I don't have any problem with this configuration. I think I have problems with the numbers, but I don't have any problems.
I'm glad you agree. I think that what you suggested changing physically is nowhere near the concern of the other elements.
May I comment? Is all of this retail?
This is all retail here, retail here. This is part of the residential supports that could be, pop up type space, exercise facility, concierge in the area. So we're figuring that this area back in here is going to be part of the residential power. So we put this into our retail calculations. That's slightly more retail than what we did in the previous case.
And is this really, should it be 15 feet? Is that the scale?
Yes, ma'am.
That's not one inch.
Well, this may have been enlarged and drawn, but probably is. So this has been enlarged.
Can we get a scale drawing?
Again, these were hand sketches that have been done, and kind of working through the reconfiguration and the numbers that have been on there. But they're hand sketches on the scale and they're put on CAD as of yet. So we're going to have to see.
Here's this brown sketch.
I can't believe
it's
stuck
on there.
That took me a while.
Yeah, we actually have it all out. We read it past, and I really just wanted to show it to you. These are these are work in progress.
And the arrow, the north arrow, right?
The north arrow is wrong. I mean, not that. This is, we rushed to get this in your hand. We've been studying it all along.
The key thing to me is this is much more efficient, and that helps us out. And that pedestrian connection from Rosemary to Franklin is something we wanted all along and had not been able to get previously. And I like having the public space on Rosemary Street as well. That's something else we wanted early and didn't have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the loading thing, I mean, you said it very eloquently. I mean, the thing that's ironic is, you know, the codes are created to, well, you need to have X number of loading space on all those other, in urban environments, you need trucks parked on sidewalks, they need to line traffic, you know, all sorts of things. So we're trying to balance that, but the reality is, you know, while the building is four sides, it has architecture on all four sides, the reality is buildings have front doors and back doors and side doors. And I think you can't avoid that. And I think we're doing the best we can in this situation.
We're finding, as we're interested in different types of projects around town, that some of our codes are not supporting our goals. So I don't think it's a surprise that we would have to make some ways and plans, make some exceptions in the downtown.
And you have the authority to do that in your ordinances, and it's expected that you will have to do that on these kinds of projects.
But I'm sure we'll hear that we're treating ourselves especially when everybody else
will
ask.
You've got a good, strong argument that is not the case, that you wrote the code in a manner to allow for exceptions when it makes sense to serve a greater public purpose. You've got a good argument about that.
We wind up, just to close the loop on the on this part of the discussion, and obviously I can answer questions at the end on anything you want. The parking, we wind up with 330 spaces in the garage. Now, you know, I've said this before. I mean, until you actually do structural drawings, it might be 334, it might be 326. We can stripe them real tight. I mean, I just park in a space that's priced so tight you really can't get out of it.
And in our parking garage, right there.
In the garage. Actually next to your garage. So, I mean, we made our own spaces one. Like, the reality is we think on real usable spaces, we're going to be somewhere around 330. We can recycle them, and we can get the efficiency down to 325 square feet per space. We won't be able to get in out of our door. We wind up with 330 spaces in the deck. We haven't studied, you know, do we wind up with 25 grade spaces? I think in the last thing we had 25 grade spaces, there's no reason to think that number's going to change. Of those 330 in the deck, we're basically going to need, we're looking for about 144 of those spaces to be conveyed with our unit purchasers. So that leaves about 186 spaces for the town to get the revenue from. And we need to work together to determine how many of those we want set aside for our own residents, because our parking demand for our residents will likely be in excess of 144 spaces. So that's something that we started to discuss briefly yesterday, and we need to continue to work that through based upon where we wind up on wall steps.
And part of what we will have to do is look at the overall parking numbers, comparing what we've got now, what we had negotiated in the original memorandum of agreement, and what Casey believes he has to have in order to make this work as a business, and compare that to the council's policies about preserving the number of public spaces, that sort of thing. And right now, this quick analysis shows there's some friction there, there's some difference where our interests are not quite the same, and that'll be something we have to work through to figure out how to solve.
Well, I just did a quick calculation on 35,000 per space. It's the debt service of 6% on a 25-year term, $228 a month. So that's
really big.
Yeah.
Well, then,
10 to 30 years, you could get that much more.
$10.
I mean, in terms of income model, but not in the beginning.
Okay.
So we pay for, but let me make sure I understand. We the town pay for all 330 spaces.
I don't know. I'm lost as to where you are. I mean, I thought you all wanted us to talk about the program and then get into the finance.
Oh, that's right.
So, okay. On the Wallace deck, and we really viewed the Wallace deck. Oh, and by the way, in terms of two different projects. The Henderson building, which is the easiest one, we keep referring to the Henderson building, which is the easiest one for us to discuss. And our concept there is really virtually unchanged. That is a building that we will probably want to value engineer some of the architecture. That building, we need to make sure it's simple and good and in keeping with the historic nature of that area, but we really don't have much of a change in what we're proposing there. It's probably not, with all the things we need to discuss, it's probably not really worthy at this point of a whole lot of additional discussion. We have gone back and forth in our thinking on that Henderson building to saying, is it eight, you know, really big, very expensive units, or is it 24 moderate-sized, moderately priced units? And today our temperature is it's 24 moderately priced, moderate-sized units, because one of the things we're doing with Lot 5 is effectively creating a penthouse level, where there will be the top floor of the units at Lot 5 will effectively be townhouses in the sky, if you will, two-story units. So those will be the units that will be expensive, and we're not terribly interested in having a whole lot of very expensive units. We want to have a small number of expensive units, we want to have the affordable units, and then we want to have the greatest number of units that are in that range that are achievable for the widest part of the market. The thing that is really worthy of probably some significant discussion is the Wallace deck plan itself.
Just before, I mean, just for feedback purposes,
mm-hmm.
given the the direction you're pushing the Wallace deck in, the Henderson Street building with the additional units is much preferred from my point of view.
You talk about Henderson Street, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. before right. we talk about Wallace, right. mm-hmm. I'm saying that if you're going to, I mean, our council goal is to get as many families living downtown as possible. So 25, 30 apartments is way preferable to 8 in that location, given any scenario.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. On Wallace deck, which is labeled as Lot 5 in your set of drawings that you handed out. Let me start by saying we like the other plan. We think that the peer review process with the dean, one of probably the best results of that process was the plan that we came up with on the wall step. Having said that, we can't afford to build it. It doesn't come close to making financial sense to hang those small, very narrow live workspaces on the front of the deck and to build on the entire top of the deck. So we took that as a challenge to look at what can we do to build the most efficient units as possible on top of the deck. And we also viewed the top of the Wallace deck as the location, as the most logical location, in our opinion, for the affordable units, or as many of the affordable units as the council will allow us to put there. And let me tell you why that is. The design we have created here, which is shown here, these are basically townhomes that are built on top of the deck. And the benefit of having them as townhomes, you were calling last night, we talked a lot about some of the difficulties associated with integrating affordable units in, for example, the lot five building where you have tremendously expensive, what I believe will be expensive condominium associations, you have the air conditioning and heat the common corridors, you have to maintain them, lobbies, services in the lobby and so forth. Townhomes, and particularly the way we've designed them here on top of the wall, is that there effectively is no common area. The common area is the public space, which would continue to be owned by the town on top of the deck. So from a cost to operate the unit once it's been purchased, all the folks really have to do is maintain the inside of their unit. The only sort of condominium components really would be sharing the party wall, which is, God willing, cost nothing. And then a periodic repaint and repayment. So I suspect that the cost to maintain those units would be at most half of what it would be to be in the condo building, the elevators and life safety and so forth. So this really creates 28 units, sort of loft-style townhome units, on top of the wall stack. And our financial model that we provided makes the assumption that those are the affordable units. These are basically two-story units on the ground floor. You've got the common space, the kitchen, and so forth, and then on the second floor you have the bedroom or the bedrooms, as the case may be. We had hoped, part of our intent on this design was that we could do these out of stick, and we've, I think, since come to the conclusion that that's probably not possible. So we really thought we were going to drive the cost way down, because right now the value of the subsidy for the affordable units winds up being about $100,000 a unit. Our goal was to try to drive that down to about $50,000 a unit. We were not successful in doing that, because of really the nature of the construction that needs to occur in the fire district and then on top of the deck. I think this is a very smart solution, but I do want to say, and I shared it with Cal and the folks yesterday, that if you determine that the other plan is better, any sane person would determine the other plan is better. So presumably everybody would agree with that. If you determine that that's the plan you want, we're happy to help, to be helpful, but we just don't think the market is right to do that plan today. We think it's probably better to do that plan after we've already established the other projects. So we think the plan we've designed now works and can make sense. I do want to be clear that once you do the plan we're doing now, you probably, it'd be very difficult to later do the peer review plan. It'll be tremendously difficult. The other benefit of this plan is that since we're not covering the front, in terms of impact to the existing garage, both during construction and after construction, in terms of losing spaces and so forth, this will have far less impact on the garage.
My reaction to this proposal is that it does not meet some of the key objectives that the council has for this area, particularly in widening the street face. But also, I think, would tie this property up for a very long time, 30 or 40 years, with this kind of development. And it just does not seem to be the right kind of development for the site. If you stand on the plaza today and gaze across the alleyway, your view is frankly not very nice. You're looking at the backs of some dilapidated old commercial buildings in part, and a few that are in much better shape. I'm not sure it creates the kind of living environment that is going to be real successful. And my advice to the council would be to wait on this, develop the Henderson building and the Lot 5 property, see what other development is stimulated in the downtown. I think there will be other development. And see if we can't get some more push on the price points for development on top of the Wallace set a few years from now. It just seems like a waste to put this kind of development on this property when maybe in a few years you could justify doing something different.
Okay. So I move into a summary of the financials. So I think we'll be finding ourselves here at the moment. Any other comments?
What happens? I mean, suppose that happens. Where do the workforce houses go?
In the Henderson building. As many as you allow us to put in the Henderson building.
Well, this is a big point, and I'm Karen, I've been on the Considering Funding Committee for since January. We're very more and more aware of the issue of condominium fees and sort of the problem that you're trying to avoid. But I'm not convinced here that it's not solvable. And we've got a subcommittee trying to look at it in terms of maybe structuring the arrangement so that the condo fees for the people in the affordable units are actually geared to the price that they pay for the house rather than the square footage of the house. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's inequitable to the people living in a $1 million townhome. But so what? You know? So I'm not convinced that we have to give up on that yet. I also worry that if we were to give up on it in this project, it really does set a precedent. I mean, it really does set a will make it tremendously difficult for us to ask somebody like Greenbridge down the street to integrate the condos into their units. And so that's the way I'm thinking about this. What kind of vision are we creating for not just for this development, but for everything that's going to be redeveloped downtown?
I will say this. I think there's nothing in the way we're modifying the design of Lot 5 that makes it any more or less difficult to incorporate the affordable units in Lot 5. It's purely a financial issue, both up front in terms of how we bridge this gap, because it costs us less to have an affordable unit in the Wallace building, I'm sorry, in the Henderson building than it does in the Lot 5 building. The Lot 5 building costs more to build. The Lot 5 building, the units that we'd be selling for affordable prices instead of market prices, we get more for the market prices. So on both ends, it's a larger hit to us. But other than money, other than closing the financial gap, there's no reason we can't do it. But I will say this, I'm anxious to hear what the results of that committee is, because I don't know, I assume somebody legally will research the ability to tell somebody else you have to pay to subsidize the other person's home. I don't know if that's legal or not. But if it's legal and it's what your committee wants, and it's your consensus, then we'll incorporate that into the revised financial modeling when we deal with the financial gap. But our request at this moment is to essentially put all of the affordable units in the Henderson building. The Henderson building won't just be an affordable building. It will have affordable land market rate units if we don't do the Wallace.
How many units are we talking about if we don't do the Wallace deck?
The Henderson building is 20...
The Henderson building is 32, we have 130.
The Henderson building is 26 units, right?
We got different numbers.
The Henderson building is 26 units, based on our pro forma.
Right.
And the Lot 5 building is 132, so combined is 168. And you take 15% of 158, 24, I think, once you round up.
So the Henderson building essentially is going to be
all the four units. If we did 100% of the
project. Or you could do a few more units in it.
Right. The Henderson building would probably be would. It would actually have more than if it had the affordable units in it. It would have more than which would be small units.
My advice is similar to what Councilman Green is saying. If you want to continue your policy, you have to do it with your own project. I don't think if you decide to vary on this project, you'll never be able to hold anybody else to the previous standards.
Well,
and it would be a real step back. And I haven't done much research on this, but I've been following the research that others have done on this topic. And I've had a conversation with another prominent developer who believes that it is legal to arrange the fees so that it's proportional to the price charged, and that it's perfectly all right to reallocate a higher proportion of costs to the wealthier persons who pay the higher prices, and believes that that's sustainable as a matter of law and can be worked out as a matter of law. So I think it's challenging and difficult, and it certainly imposes expenses on you that I can understand you'd rather avoid.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is possible to do it. And if the council wants to continue to have, in effect, the 15% policy, and have a policy of requiring the developments to be, I mean, the affordable units to be a part of the development, if you don't do it here, it's going to be very hard for you to sustain it anywhere else. In my opinion.
But if you do it on lot 5, our cash flow goes down, right?
Yeah, I mean, the gap will be 11 or 3 or 5, and it'll be 12 and a half.
Okay, this is a policy discussion.
That's
I don't know that we ought to have with Graham, but we ought to have it
soon.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
John, I absolutely agree with
you.
It is a policy decision of the council.
Yeah, yeah, but what I'm saying is it has enormous implications for the
I don't want to string this out for more, but I don't necessarily see it the exact same way. The key points are that having our development partner build these units in a phased project in, you know, within 3 blocks of each other downtown is very different and does accomplish a lot of the council goals. And we're trying to do a lot of things at once.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I disagree. So, with the approach.
Let me give you an example, a real life example that we're actually going to deal with on another project in your town, and that is our project working on down the street, where it has, 5 buildings on one site. And, you know, the way the project's been designed, one of the 5 buildings is where all the affordable units are. It is one project, no different than a large subdivision that has, you know, 1,000 lots, 150 lots. So it, that, now, the distance from the one building in our project to the furthest away building in the project, I don't know if it's any, it's probably less than the distance from Wallace to Lot 5, but we don't anticipate, we're certainly not proposing, it's up to you all, we're not proposing if we have 6 buildings and each building has 50 units and it takes 7 of each units of each building all in the same project, we're not proposing to do that.
Right.
We might be forced to do that, I don't know, that would be, without understanding, I haven't been in all the meetings, I'm not sure how that actually accomplishes any objective that wouldn't be accomplished by putting in. I understand the idea of not wanting people to write a check. I understand the idea of not saying this is the part of the town where we're putting affordable units and we're gonna, and if you're a developer, you can go buy an old dumpy apartment building in that town and say you're affordable and call it a day. That I understand completely.
Right, but there's another project adjacent to yours where they're proposing to give us an existing structure for the affordable element as well. So, on the project on Weaver Dairy Road Extension, which was our first significant private developer building affordable units, they built a phase, a separate mm-hmm. structure with affordable units, and we considered that a success. So, I want to know, sort of along the line that John was starting mm-hmm. to go, is it? Can we get our subsidy down from, or the town contribution down from $5 million to $2 million if we put all the affordable units? Those are the kind of.
I would maybe want to start talking about millions because John has some alternate views and.
Okay.
Before we start.
We may want to talk about those alternate views because I've been here for a year. I spent $800,000 on alternate views of how the financial problems are going to go away by the wave of a wand.
No, they're not going to go away by the wave of a wand. They're real problems that have to be really dealt with. And that John does have some alternate views that the council needs to hear. And somewhere between John's view And where we are right now in this discussion is where the solution is, in my opinion.
Well, we may make some headway if they can't bother. It's possible.
Well, we're not continuing that. Casey's not that kind of negotiator. Yeah.
Well, on the affordable thing, we're happy to, we would prefer near-term financial situation, and we think preventing long-term financial problems, we prefer to have them all in the Henderson building. It's, we're partners on this project, it's your land, we're your development partner. This decision is more important for you than it is for us. This has more implications for you than it does for us. For us, the implications are no different than how much we pay per yard of concrete from a financial perspective. So we would defer to you in your judgment on this. We just need to understand specifically what your direction is on that, because there is a financial reality for it. And I'm happy to do it however it is.
We need to understand the financial reality. We also need to understand where we are in policy making, and I frankly don't want to wait another year to make a policy and have the deal go away. So
I don't think you can afford to wait a year to figure out your answer on this.
Well, we haven't had one public hearing on the Inclusionary Zoning Task Force report, and I imagine it's going to take a while to bring that to a conclusion.
This project's in advance of that.
Okay.
Well, let me ask a question. I would love to move off of the policy and get one of this. Is the concern about precedent setting, should we be operating, because I believe you have been consistent in your message on this. I believe that we won't be successful in convincing you to have zero affordable units in Lot 5. We talk round and round about this, and I forget how the MOU ultimately wound down on this, but is it your opinion that we need to put 15% of the Lot 5 units into the affordable pool and 15% of the Henderson building, of the Henderson and Wallacek buildings in the affordable pool, or do we have some flexibility to say, in total it's 160 units, or 156 units, we need to do 24, you can put 10 in the Wallacek and 14 in Henderson.
The compelling argument is the homeowners association stuff. That's the answer to that question will determine the answer to your question, is the way I see it. I mean, we prefer dispersal.
Right.
There are some reasons that we've heard for not doing it that way. Until we have the answer to that, we don't have all the players. You have compelling economic reasons. At one point when you were talking about a bank of affordable housing on Franklin Street over what is currently Walker's Funeral Home, well, that was a pretty difficult thing to say with that,
right.
In my mind.
Right, and but following up on that, I don't see that Inclusionary building on Henderson between Rosemary and Franklin is bad.
It's
a remarkable accomplishment.
I agree, and so I need that one last piece sort of to find me, because it's not even possible any other way. I mean, Cal's opinion that it is possible is, advantages the sports argument. But we're an open mind.
Just a couple of things to think about in this discussion is obviously the homeowners association issue is, as you said, is paramount and the biggest one. But when you look at Lot 5 also, you look at is it better to have an affordable unit in Lot 5 without any parking spaces that are allocated to that unit? Because the cost of that parking space is over $40,000. And you've got a unit that is just on for $85,000. So do you have an affordable unit without a parking space there versus an affordable unit from the Henderson building where you have existing parking, that could be affordable for that occupant in that unit and be a better, lifestyle, source for them? Or, and it all comes down to the...
It's a great question. I mean, we're breaking new ground here in terms of that stuff. Everybody else in parking spaces is right in front of their house.
Right.
Everything else we've ever done. And I don't know. And I may be belaboring this point at this point. I say... I have an open mark. And that's a totally relevant thing, what you just said, that we had approached. I mean, it's a difficult one. the one thing that this 9-10 month involvement with this task force has done is totally reinforce how difficult the problem mm-hmm. for affordable housing is.
Right. And, you know, from our standpoint, of course, this is selfish from our view, but we still have to sell these units also. Mm-hmm. So by reallocating those homeowners association dues, and when we're looking at anywhere I know of in you know, from you know, D.C. down to here, condominium association dues have been based on unit sizes. So if we are looking at being, you know, very different from the marketplace and reallocating a much higher rate on our units, we're not competing with the next condominium project. We're competing with the single family homeowner who's out in that sprawling community. And when they're looking at, hey, you know, if I now, instead of having a $350 a month homeowner association dues, I've got $600 in there, I may make that choice, that lifestyle choice, so I'm going to be in a single family home, and I'm not going to be in that
family. What do you think
would
be double?
Well, I'm just, you know, depending on the number of affordable units, you know.
If in fact you take the opinion that somebody spends $1 million for a condo, and then the affordable unit is $100,000. If in fact on that basis, as you talk about scaling, if the whole thing is made 10 times what the affordable unit person pays, and it's still two human beings, you know, two of them happen to be rich, two of them happen to be not rich, and those two human beings are doing this, they're using the elevator the same amount of time, they're using the doorman the same amount of time, they're doing all those things. And that person pays the two people pay 10 times as much. It may wind up being double. If all you did was say, look, bottom line is the subsidy we all need to give the affordable units is $200 a month per affordable unit, and we're going to spread it over the other 85 units, over 85% of the units, it won't be double. It'll be maybe 10% extra. And if it's legally defensible, it's not going to put us at a marketing disadvantage. I think the reality is what does or doesn't put us at a marketing disadvantage. In strong markets, you can sell through anything, and in bad markets, you can't sell anything no matter what the circumstances. In medium markets, the more hurdles, yes, the more things you have to explain to a purchaser. Your unit, you're going to get a fee simple source, but it's on ground. Here's what your parking situation is. You get one unit, you get one parking space, the other one you got to go around the corner and go talk to the town about. Your condo dues, you really pay your fair share plus you pay the subsidized dues. The more of those things you have to explain, the more reason a person has to get up and walk out and say, I'll buy somewhere else.
Well, the subsidy might not come from the homeowner, it might come from the town. Otherwise, you could question about that. I'm still saying I'm not willing to give up on the idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know anything, and I know very, very little about your other project that's down the street. I do know that the other project down there that we talked about was the building that's going to be donated and it's going to be all allocated for affordable housing. Well, the simple reason for that is that it's in the resource conservation district and you can't really you can't develop it the way you could the other building. So to me, that's a wonderful thing, it's a one-time thing, it's a kind of windfall thing, but it's Plan B because the Plan A was not really possible. We don't have inclusionary zoning ordinance yet, it's required that developers to do, but I hope we're going to aim for because it's true inclusionary units. And to me, it still is setting a very questionable precedent for other projects that are going to come online.
Well, I agree with a lot of what you said. I don't agree with everything you said, and that's why I think that this part of this conversation has got to be taken offline with you guys. And I think that there's a condo issue, there's a cost issue, the delta in the costs, and there's the political side of this. And I tried really hard to get Kevin to this meeting so that Kevin couldn't come, but it seems like a conversation the committee should have with Kevin and some staff and sort it out.
Well, what we can do for you is we will, if we get clear direction, if you all share the same view of the Wallace Deck building as Cal does, then we can do the math, and we can tell you you know, here's the financial package we need if 100% of the units are in the Henderson building. And for each unit you want us to take out of the Henderson building and put in lot 5, here's what it does to our financial request. It's not, it's, it'll take us a day to figure that out, and it'll be a, you know, it won't be to the decimal, but it'll be in round numbers. And that other thing that's
very useful.
Right. We'll do that.
And y'all did not talk about the Wallace today, and I'm interested, and I think they need to know what's your reaction.
I'll agree with you, Dan. I think this space here is going to be such a good space, just like it currently is. And I think if we get there another way, and I know if the council initiative, so this project only works if you do them both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't make sense, then what?
My personal feeling was this is the one part of this whole project that I had absolutely no doubts about is now gone. So, which was the Rosemary Street? No, I'm serious. I mean, I'm not saying I'm down on anything else. I'm just saying the part I liked the best was the work space coming down and obliterating Wallace Deck. Now we started the Wallace Deck.
You obliterate it. I need to stand
there. Right. I guess it's the problem.
So, think about the financials if those parking spaces weren't there. We wouldn't even be considering it. And, you know, nobody is making a big deal about the town contribution of those parking spaces, but that's really driving the possibility. So I'm sort of thinking about, well, we still have lot 2 as a phase 2, so maybe lot 2 and the Wallace Deck become sistered a phase 2 or phase 2 and 3. So, you know, I think Hal's right that doing the Wallace Deck the way you're talking about it does, maybe if you could have stick framed it and it would have been more, the numbers would have looked better, but it seems like if you're doing steel and concrete, you've got the worst of both worlds here. So I think Hal's thinking about it correctly and looking down the road, I don't think we should drop it. I think we should keep that as our...
Preserve it as a development site, not for this kind of development.
I think we preserve that as a future phase of this downtown redevelopment project that we're doing with RAM.
But
no,
not this
plan. Tying it to development of Lot 2 makes a good deal of sense because there's a natural way to connect.
The other thing, the genesis, by the way, of the... council, my recollection of the genesis of the council saying one can't happen without the other was related to money.
That's right.
And it was told, we're paying you lease payments.
That's right.
You needed our lease payment on the wall set to pay for your share of the parking on lot 5. That was we, from an agreement standpoint, there may have been discussions before that.
Okay.
That's a good segue in the mind.
So you can do the thing that you just said in a reasonable period of time and produce some data that will help the council understand the financial implications of the location of the affordable
house. Right.
That'd be very helpful. Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that, as we move into the discussion about finances, I want to be clear about how I'm discussing it. For the purpose of this discussion, we have stripped out every payment to the town or every payment from the town to us. If you recall in the old arrangement or the current arrangement, we pay rent, we pay prepaid ground rent, the town makes a contribution for improvements. Plus, the town was making a contribution of $500,000 towards, I think, parking for affordable is the way it was actually documented. That's all been stripped out. There's one vestige of that program in these numbers, and that is this $200,000 for public space programming that we're requesting. That's in there. What one of the things we discussed yesterday that we wanted, in terms of our ideas for ways to further narrow the gap, is to look at ways, you know, can we find grants, can we find other ways to get that accomplished, can we find another organization to take that on that would view it as a positive, being able to have space in which they can conduct events. So that's still in here, so we'll just leave it in there, at least for this discussion, but that's one thing we'd like to consider removing for now as a way to close the gap.
And at some point, when we're at the end of discussions, there may be a reason why we would want to put some do-tos and do-froms back in.
Right.
So that the deal works from a legal standpoint and from a community interest standpoint. But I think it's entirely fair to do this analysis as Casey has put it to us, with no changes at this point.
Right.
It makes it much clearer.
The other point I want to make about that is, we've made the point that there's 14 some odd million dollars of, in effect, improvements, assets that the town will own. We've also talked about, well, who gets what parking revenues and so forth. And, you know, how much is the subsidy for the affordable? The reality is, this is a partnership. The way the partnership has been structured is we keep the town away from the liability of actively being in the, quote, development business. We provide financial safeguards for the town to not have liability associated with cost overruns and so forth. And conversely, the town participates if we are more profitable, if we are above a 15% return, which is our minimum threshold, the town participates in those profits. So while there's a bit of a, I don't want to call it a tension, but there's a bit of a sense that there may be competing interest in that, well, this is something the town, I want the town to contribute towards. The reality is you can call it payment for whatever you want. You can call it for affordable, you can call it for public space, you can call it for parking, you can say that we're making less, you can say whatever you want to call it, you can call it. The reality is the numbers are what they are. These are budgets. These are presumably more accurate than they were a year ago. But please keep in mind that our plan, this plan, is actually less developed than the other plan because we started over. So these are just budgets. And at the end of the day, the way our agreement works is we have an open book arrangement. You can audit it. You can look at anything you want. And if we're making more money than we say we're making, we go above that threshold, you all get to participate. So I suspect we're going to get into discuss, well, why is this payment for this and where does this revenue come for this? We can do that, but it won't matter because at the end of the day, somebody between the two of us has to write checks to the architects and buy the concrete and steel and build the building, and then we hope these customers write us checks and offset that cost and hope there's money left over. So we can call it in as anything you want. In terms of history, I'm not going to compare today's numbers to the last round of numbers other than to say that my recollection when we last met was that we had a gap of something like $20 million to get to a break-even. Today, we have a gap of about $5.3 or $5.5 million to get to a break-even. So the gap has been narrowed significantly by doing a number of the things that, you know, some of our own. Do you have a question? Sorry.
Well, I mean, if we're not going to do, I'm just trying to get a quick handle on, what is eliminating building on top of the wall spec do?
Probably not much.
Is that a wash?
I think it will be de minimis in the context of this discussion.
And that's assuming that we're doing an affordable product in the house.
In the house, correct.
Otherwise, then
we have to. I mean, because if you look at the number of units, you know, we lose money on, I mean, any less unit you build, you actually, the gap theoretically can narrow. But then again, we're also building less that we can sell at market rate, so it's sort of, you know, it's kind of all, it'll probably be close to that. But whatever it is, we'll generate new numbers and share them with you. The total project cost today on this pro forma were $83.4 million. And again, we stripped out all the due to and due from payments. The RFP budget was 67.5 million, so the cost was about 15.9. Now it's actually deceiving. That's a 24% increase. But in fact, we're getting 29,000 less square feet than we're in the RFP plan. So we're actually spending 24% more to get 7% less. So if you were to try to balance this so that you were comparing apples to apples, where you had the same number of square feet in the RFP plan and today's cost, you really are looking at cost having gone up about $22 or $23 million on a net basis if you were building the same number of square feet. So essentially what our request is to have the town, by virtue of participating in some financing, allow us to reach into the future and grab some of the future revenues off the project and pull them forward to contribute to close half that gap, to cover half of the budget increase. Now, it conveniently is about half. What we're really trying to do is stay to where our return percentage isn't significantly diminished from what we were willing to do in the RFP. The logical response is charge more to the customer. We are projecting a 14% increase from now to what we had in the RFP in terms of projecting an average selling price of $317 per square foot. I want to point out that price of $317 a square foot excludes what we're talking about for floor premiums and upgrades. So when you add that number in, that really adds almost $8 or $9 a square foot to the average price. So it adds probably about another $8 a foot to the average price. So you're really talking about closer by the time you add it all in of about $325 a foot. The other thing I remind you is that at least for the one parking space you're getting for free, but the other spaces would be paying for, and a lot of comparable projects, when you look at comparables, they're not paying extra for parking. So we left the commercial rents unchanged. We don't have any evidence to support increasing the commercial rents beyond what we have them. On the flip side, we actually left the capitalization rate, which is the way we value commercial property, unchanged, and in fact, it's probably not appropriate. We probably should have actually increased the capitalization rate by maybe as much as 0.5%, which has the effect of decreasing the value. So, but we left it unchanged, and it's pretty aggressive. So as I said, if you take the current budget, strip out all of the due to's and due from, you have a gap of $5.3 million. Our return on cost, which is a quick refresher, is the net profit. Purely revenues less cost divided by the total cost. That's return on cost of leader per hood. And the RFP was 8%. And we said at that time that was significantly below what we typically do, but that we were willing to do it for a lot of non-economic reasons. And also because we believe we could improve the economics based upon good execution, too. So in order for us to, in effect, get back to where we were on the return on cost, that's where the $11.35 million quote town contribution or town participation in financing comes from. And if we were to get that contribution, that would get us back to basically the 7.27% return on cost. Our thinking in terms of how that gets accomplished. As I said before, we can demonstrate to you that there's assets that the town would be owning that would certainly have a cost in excess of that contribution. On our numbers, just some other highlights of the numbers.
Just generally, you're talking about owning the park.
parking of the open, parking the public plaza.
The way it was described would be the parking, the public plaza on the lot 5,
Franklin,
Franklin. You're handing the public area on Rosemary, sure, as part of our ownership. And you're also counting street stakes, that's aren't you?
Right, correct. So you still own the air.
You own the air.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And the dirt.
Right.
You own the air. Lease of the air. There's still a long-term lease.
That's right. That changes the number of us
to the public.
Right.
You know, I can go through in detail some of the other clauses, but I mean, and in terms of our ideas for how to close that gap, or how to get that gap funded, and I'm talking around numbers. I got some good feedback from some of Cal, some of the Rogers staff. For all intents and purposes, the property tax revenue generated on a reasonable assumption on what we're under your current rates under the value of the improvements that we intend to build. You take that plus a reasonable assumption on the sales on the town's portion of the sales tax. That on a you combine those two, you probably can support and you can service certificates of participation to the tune of about 40% of the gap. That's in year one. Now that number, the percent of the gap that it can cover grows as the year is growing because of your North Carolina level principal repayments. The other area that we've discussed is parking revenue and in trying to determine how much of that parking revenue can be used to support an effective repayment of the certificate.
So that you all were talking about last night, or
just some general thoughts on that. When we last met, when this topic came up, the one of the comments, I think it was Cal, one of the real comments that we had kind of laid out there was, okay, assuming that we get ourselves over that, we need some assurance that these revenues are actually being generated by the project, and we're completely open-minded to, you know, if it's letters of credit, whatever we have to do to eliminate the risk to the town, that the town could in effect make this contribution on the hopes of these future revenues coming from the project and us never actually delivering the buildings and the spaces that would generate those revenues. So we can secure that in any way that's appropriate. We're not asking to be alleviated of that responsibility. And
this was a very significant point. Very significant.
And I think the thing I'll leave with before we sort of open it to discussion and questions is that, in the RFP, a lot of the questions that we were asked, like one of the questions that Tom Chainbeck asked, tell us the revenues generated in the next 40 years from the project. And I think the significance of the 40 years was originally there was some proposal about a 40-year ground, so I think that's why the number 40 came out. I mean, any way you look at it, the pure financial revenues generated from this project will more than cover the contribution. It may take more than 10 years or more than 20 years to actually get to the point where that's the case. But if you ignore the public benefit of having the project, if you ignore the public benefit of the affordable units, if you ignore the public benefit of spurring other redevelopment, if you just pretend all that's worth nothing, there's no doubt that if we're able to somehow deal with the fact that these are future revenues that we got to pay the contractor today for, there's a way to make that work. Those revenues are there. That's the one comment I'll leave. The second comment I'll leave is that we are obviously we would have liked to have, when we submitted the RFP, snapped our fingers and had and be under construction the next day and have everything go the way we had planned. The reality is the projects evolve, things take time, things change as time goes on.
But I would, and I understand that the nature of the contribution, you know, the last contribution of the town group was $500,000, and now we're talking about $11 million plus. So I recognize that it's a fairly significant change. Having said that, I do want to say that if you all determine that that's a risk you can't take or something you don't want to do, I understand that, and it would be unfortunate because we would have spent a lot of time and a lot of money. On the flip side, if it is something we work out, I think that I don't think anyone should be apologizing for, oh, it's a smaller project, it's less of a project, the town's deal is not as good. The reality is, this is a project that would be the envy of towns all over America, big and small. So I think I'm a little worried that we won't feel good about it if we're able to bridge this gap and resolve it. People won't take pride and feel good about the fact of what we've accomplished because it's taken so long and has so many generations. So I would hope that we can be positive and optimistic that what we're going to create is a very fair way to do it, something that everyone can look back on and feel good that we created a good asset for the community and an asset that makes a difference for us.
If you look at the numbers, if for a moment you just accept Casey's $11 million figure, in a few minutes we're going to say we're not going to accept that, we want to worry that number down. If you look at that, there is a break-even point. If you do the projections, the revenue that you get from property tax and sales tax, and we can figure out what the reasonable accretion might be from parking if we end up with additional spaces for public use that we don't have now. And there is a point at which the dollars start to be significant and the costs are reduced, and you do start to have a net return to the town. And so we can figure out what that is on any number that we end up reaching agreement on. This would be a good time, and Casey, this is when you have to do your Zen thing and keep control of your blood pressure, because John's going to put some alternates out there and you're going to say, that's crazy. But we need to hear what these alternates are. And I ask you just to keep an open mind so you can really hear them.
Sure.
And talk through them. And we're not offering this as a final solution to anything. These are things that John came up with in about 3 hours last night as a different way of looking at this. He's not got a full set of numbers. He just has some ideas. But some of them are very interesting ideas and could be very helpful. And they also are sort of testing the strength, the feeling that you have about some of your numbers, and it'll be interesting to see what your reaction is. So, John, if this is okay.
Can we get
our recording? Oh, sure.
Absolutely.
That's fine. I just have a quick question.